Hello, my name is Harold Felder, and welcome to Giving an Answer, the show dedicated to defending the historic Christian faith. Today, we're going to be talking about the moral law, and to help me with this topic, I have Lanny Wilson. Let me tell you a little bit about Lanny. Lanny is a student at Southern Evangelical Seminary. He's pursuing a Master of Art with an emphasis on philosophy. He has a bachelor's degree in religious studies from UNCC, and we're just going to get right to it. Lanny, how did you come to know about the moral law?
Well, thanks for having me today. It was really the first argument that I had ever really heard, or apologetic argument that I learned for God's existence. I had a roommate, and he played a tape of a discussion Ravi Zacharias gave one time, and talking about he was at Nottingham University. Wasn't even done giving the speech yet, and a student jumped up and out of his seat and said, "Hey, how can there be a God with so much evil in the world?" And he says, "You know, please remain standing. I got some questions for you. When you say there's such a thing as evil, aren't you assuming there's such a thing as good as well?" And the students paused and said, "Well, yeah, I guess so." He says, "Well, if you're assuming there's such a thing as good, aren't you assuming there's a moral law that differentiates between the two?" And at this point, he reminded the student of a debate between Bertrand Russell and Frederick Copleston. And Copleston pinned Russell on this question and said, "You know, how do you tell the difference between good and bad?" He goes, "The same way I tell the difference between blue and green." He goes, "But you do that by seeing, don't you? How do you know the difference between good and bad?" Mm-hmm. And he goes, "By feeling, what else?" And Zacharias says, "Well, the obvious next question is," he should have said, "Well, in some cultures they love their neighbors, in other cultures they eat them, both on the basis of feeling. Do you have a preference?" And so it really kind of brought home is, well, there's something else going on here.
Yeah.
But he goes on and asks the student about it, and the student is like, "Well, what does that have to do anything?" "Well, that's what you're trying to disprove. You're using a standard that requires God exists, and you're saying that God doesn't exist by using the very standard."
Right.
Well, that causes a problem.
Right.
And that's how I came to know about it, and, you know, it just really kind of clicked. It's like, oh, wow, I never really thought of it that way, so... Anyway, that's how I came about to know the moral argument.
Well, for those of us, or for those of an audience who aren't familiar with it, exactly what is the moral law?
Well, the moral law is that intuitive and transcendent standard of right and wrong that is written on the human heart. It informs us of what we ought to do. It's a prescription, not a description of the way we live. It's basically that standard by which our lives are judged.
So. Now, you already mentioned that the moral law is used to prove the existence of God. That's how you first came interested in it. Mm-hmm. How can the moral law be used to prove the existence of God?
Well, I think it's really helpful. There's an illustration given by Dr. Geiser, and he says two statements whenever he does a thing. He says, "If there is no God, what Hitler did is just a matter of opinion."
Yeah.
Which is, you know, kind of an interesting statement. And he also says, it follows up with another one, "If at least one thing is wrong, that is torturing babies, murder, rape, whatever, then God exists." Well, you know, this is just really fascinating. Well, how can that be? Well, the moral argument has traditionally been stated a couple different ways, but the most popular way has been all laws require a lawgiver. There is a moral law, therefore there is a moral lawgiver, and that would be God. The way that I kind of like to argue the moral law is actually based off of a version that was given a little bit more recently by William Craig. And he says, if God does not exist, then objective moral laws do not exist. Atheists and theists agree on this point. You have Bertrand Russell. He at one point had written this: "Ethics arises from the pressures of the community on the individual. Man does not always instinctively feel the desires which are useful to his herd, the herd being anxious and that the individual should act in his interest, has invented various devices for causing the individual interest to be in harmony with that of the herd. One of these is morality." And again, another atheist, Michael Ruse, states, "Morality is a biological adaptation no less than hands and feet and teeth, considered as a rationally justifiable set of claims about an objective something. Ethics is illusory. I appreciate that when somebody says, 'Love thy neighbor as thyself,' they think they are referring to something above and beyond themselves. Nevertheless, such a things are true without foundation. Morality is just an aid for survival and reproduction, and any deeper meaning is illusory."
So, well, according to him then, loving your neighbor, I mean, there's no inherent good in that then, from what you just read.
Exactly.
There's no reason to love your neighbor.
Right, and that's the whole point. There really is no, on an atheist scale, there really is no moral difference between Mother Teresa or Adolf Hitler.
Right.
There is no difference.
Right.
But it's just a matter of opinion. I like chocolate ice cream, you like vanilla ice cream, or I like broccoli with cheese, and somebody doesn't like Brussels sprouts. I mean, it's just, they're on the same level. But I think you and I see that's, something's really wrong here.
Yeah.
There are differences, and that's the whole point, is that atheists agree that if God doesn't exist, there are no moral laws, and that's why, you know, Friedrich Nietzsche knew that the death of God would bring about moral nihilism, you know, and so he came up with the idea of the overman, or the superman, as it's commonly called, you know, who's going to be able to rise above the fact that there are no values anymore. You also have some of the statements by, like, Richard Dawkins, and this one right here really gets me, because he says, in a universe of blind physical forces and genetic replication, some people are going to get hurt, other people are going to get lucky, and you won't find any rhyme or reason in it, nor any justice. The universe we observe has precisely the properties we should expect if there is, at the bottom, no design, no purpose, no evil, and no other good. Nothing but blind, pitiless indifference. DNA neither knows nor cares. DNA just is, and we dance to its music. Now, let me ask you a question, Harold. What do you tell the teenage girl that's just been raped that the man was merely dancing to his DNA?
Yeah.
What do you tell to the parents whose child was just murdered? Oh, don't get too upset. He was just dancing to his DNA.
And according to that, I mean, there was actually nothing wrong with this guy raping someone's daughter.
Well, it was just he's just dancing with his DNA.
Right.
Yeah, and there's nothing wrong about it at all.
And there's no sense of accountability, too. If you follow that to his logical conclusion, no one is responsible for any of his actions.
Right. I mean, you're absolutely right. I mean, how can you be held responsible for it? You know, just because the community doesn't like it? Well, that doesn't really make it really wrong.
Right.
That's the whole point. It's always kind of interesting because I'll listen to a lot of talk radio, and invariably this topic will come up, and you'll have somebody will call in and say, well, you can't be good without God. And the radio show host will, you know, summarily, all he has to do is just produce one example of an atheist, right, or non-believer, right, that is a morally good person, and, you know, the whole thesis is just crushed.
Yeah.
But that's not what I'm claiming, because
right,
I want to be real careful about what I'm saying. I'm not saying that you have to believe God in order to be good. I'm not saying that you can't even develop a good ethical system without believing in God. I'm not saying that at all either. What I'm saying is that without God, there are no moral values, and therefore the atheist just simply lives better than his system allows.
Right, yeah.
That's all I'm saying is that, yes, you can be good without God. You just have no basis to be good without God. And that's the whole argument right there. But to kind of bring it back a little bit, what I've argued is that if God does not exist, moral values don't exist. The quotes that I've read, atheists, theists agree on that point. The rub is that moral values do exist.
Right.
And we all know it. And I got 8 reasons why we should think moral values exist. Number one is it's just undeniable. I mean, really, I mean, whenever somebody says the claim, there are no moral values. Now, that doesn't sound like it's directly self-defeating, but think about it. Are they saying that you ought not act like there's moral values?
Right.
Well, wait a minute. What are you talking about, this ought?
Yeah.
Why should I ought do anything, or why should I do anything? Well, that's a prescription, not a description of what is. And so, you know, I think in that case right there, moral values are just undeniable.
And as you were saying, whenever you say ought, you're implying type of morality.
Right. That's a moral command. That's a moral duty that is being given.
Right.
Whenever you use words like should, ought, anything that derives from that. We also know that moral law exists not really so much by what we do, but how we react. Think about it this way. We never really get upset whenever we do something bad to somebody every now and then. Whenever somebody does something bad to us, wait a minute, you know, now you're stepping on people's toes. I love the story of the professor who had done an assignment with his class, and a student had written a paper, it had thoroughly documented, it was a wonderful paper on moral relativism. And he, you know, did everything right, turned in a nice blue folder, gave it to the professor. A week later, he got the paper back, and right there on the front page was F, I don't like blue folders. And the student goes to the professor's office and says, hey, this is not right. This is not just. You know, you got to grade the paper on its merits. And the professor says, wait a minute. I did a lot of papers. Which one was yours? Oh, wait, yours was the one on moral relativism. It said there are no things such as justice, rightness, goodness, anything. Yeah, that was my paper. Well, fine. I don't like blue folders. You get an F. And he's like, wait a minute. You can't do that. Why should I be right, moral, and just whenever you say there are no such things?
Right. Yeah, and like you say, that's how we know. That's how we really know that there's a moral law. Because we can go around all the time and denying that there's a moral law, saying that everything is equivalent until something happens to us.
Right.
You know, until someone steals from us. Then all of a sudden, that guy was wrong who stole from us.
Yeah. You go right into the next point was J.P. Moreland going along with the same lines. He was talking with a college student one time. And, you know, they got this thing, and the student was like, no, there are no moral values or anything. J.P. Moreland knew he wasn't going anywhere, so he said, well, thank you for your time. He stood up, started unplugging the guy's stereo in his dorm room. He said, what are you doing? He goes, well, you just said there are no moral values, and I really like your stereo, so I'm going to take it. You know, I could really use this. And, you know, the student, you know, came to realize, like, well, wait a minute. Why am I saying that he can't do this? That's a moral judgment.
Right. And another example, you were talking about the classroom. I heard of an example in the classroom, too, where this professor was, you know, going through the whole semester telling the class about, you know, how there was no such thing as right and wrong and there was no moral law. And then when it came time for the final, the students decided to get together and, you know, have little groups and take the final. And the professor said, no, you can't do that. That's cheating. They said, what do you mean cheating? There's no such thing as, are you telling us we're wrong? We can't be wrong. You told us there's no such thing as right and wrong.
Yeah, I mean, it just goes,
we can't live our lives that way.
You can't live your lives. Nobody lives their lives that way.
Right.
Not in any culture.
Right.
And and that's the whole point. Nobody lives like this. We intuitively know when we've been wronged.
Right.
Even whenever our moral statements may be the exact opposite, we know when we've been wronged, and we expect everybody to treat us how we want to be treated. Also, the moral law, is the basis for human rights. Whenever Thomas Jefferson wrote the Declaration of Independence, you know, he appealed to the Creator, to nature's laws, and said, you know, it was these things that are self-evident. And the reason that he did that is because who else is he going to appeal to? We hold these opinions to be, that life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness are just our opinions. Well, King George is like, well, guess what? I like, you know, having you under my subjection and control. And there's really no grounds. I mean, even whenever the Nazis were being tried in the Nuremberg trials, you know, they were accused of violating basic human rights, which transcend all humans. But if there is no moral law, then frankly, you can do whatever you want to anybody.
And that's a really interesting point, because one of the things that happened when the Nazis were being held, you know, trying to be held accountable, is that that was actually their defense. Now, we know that Hitler was a Darwinist. He didn't believe, you know, in moral absolutes. He didn't believe in God. He didn't believe he had to be accountable to anyone. So when they had the Nuremberg trials, their defense was, hey, you know, it's our rules. We make up the rules. Basically, society makes up what's right and what's wrong.
Right.
And this was our society. We decided that, well, killing these people was perfectly fine.
Right.
But what happened? The UN, the people on the who were trying them, they didn't appeal to them under their own law. They appealed to a higher standard.
Yeah.
They said, no, there's a standard above your standard to which you must be held, to which we are going to hold you accountable to.
Yeah. And what's even more important is that the standard has to be even higher than what, in this case right here, the UN did.
Right,
it can't even be their standard, because then they would just be imposing their societal
law.
We're all held to this transcendent standard. It rises above everybody.
Right.
And it's pointless to really deny it, because then you assume that your value to deny it is valuable.
Right.
And so nobody really gets around it.
And you were reading a quote I forgot who you were reading a quote from, but I have a quote here from Hitler. And,
okay.
Because we were talking about the whole Darwinist thing, you know.
Yeah.
And his quote says this. Now, this is what it leads to. If you don't believe in moral absolutes, this is the type of stuff it leads to. He says, if nature does not wish the weaker individuals should mate with stronger, she wishes even less that a superior race should intermingle with an inferior one. It is the stronger and the best who must triumph, and what they have, and that they have the right to endure. He who would live must fight. He who does not wish to fight in this world where permanent struggle is the law of life has no right to exist.
Yeah, I love how, and you see this with Darwin, and he's actually being very inconsistent, Darwinist. Well, actually, I think most are. But they ascribe personality to blind, pitiless, indifferent nature. Nature doesn't have any preference because it's completely by chance.
Right.
And so, yeah, I mean, it's the whole herd mentality of what he's referring to in this case right here. But I just love how, you know, atheists and Darwinists in particular, they'll ascribe personality to nature, which isn't supposed to have personality.
Yeah, they also subscribe intelligence to them because supposedly nature did this so that we could survive and get along with one another. Why does nature hold up? You're talking about something as if it's intellect. Yeah, you know, that something's actually thinking through this process.
Yeah,
you know
what I mean? But the way they define nature, you can't have that, but that would just be a God substitute. Yeah. Well, so you worship God as well? No, we don't worship God, you know. we don't have any worship or whatever. So, you know, who are you ascribing this intellect and desire to? Well, it makes absolutely no sense in this type of system.
Right.
Something else I'd say is that the moral law is that unchanging standard of justice. This was really the breaking point for C.S. Lewis, because he said, when he was an atheist,
tell us about C.S. Lewis a little bit, for those who don't know.
Okay, C.S. Lewis actually was born into a Christian home, went to atheism, then pantheism, and then eventually Christian theism. So, very popular, influential author, was generally considered the greatest Christian apologist and thinker of the 20th century.
I love his stuff.
He's got some, you know, words, some things really great. But he goes through saying how when he was an atheist, he justified his atheism by saying this world is unjust. And so, well, there can't be a God because this world is unjust. And then, you know, he started thinking, well, where did I get this idea of what justice is? What would be a just world?
Right.
Well, where did that idea come from? It can't be from something that doesn't exist in the sense of an atheistic sense of the term, because what is justice? I mean, it's just word games. But if you're holding an absolute standard of justice, well, the world should be this. Where did I get that idea? It must be written on the heart, and that's the whole point. And so that was the breaking point for him, where he saw that there had to be, if there's a standard of justice, that's the only way you can measure injustice.
Right.
And that leads me to the next point. The moral law defines real moral difference. Like we said earlier, if there isn't a moral law, there is no difference between Hitler, Stalin, Genghis Khan, Mother Teresa, Billy Graham, yourself, your audience. They really are not any different than Osama bin Laden if there is no moral law. I mean, that'll really make you really think twice.
Here's another thing I want to interject here. I know a lot of times people will, you know, talk about Christianity and how a lot of people have been killed in the name of religion and all that type of stuff. I have a couple figures here. When we talk about the way, if you do not adhere to a moral law and you actually live that out, the consequences are clear. Like, for instance, people would say all the time that we have the Crusades and, you know, a bunch of people, you know, Christians killed a bunch of people. But whenever that happens, these people are going against Christianity. They are going against the doctrines of what Christ taught. However, if you have someone who denies a moral law, if you have someone who figures that everyone is basically property, then atrocities is the natural outlook, the natural outworking. For instance, Stalin killed 18 million people.
Right.
Hitler, 12. Tao, 30 million people.
Yeah.
Now, the thing about it is that in these worldviews, these are actually consistent with not having a moral law.
Yeah.
I mean, it's actually the outworking. There's nothing inconsistent between with atheism and killing 30 million people. There's absolutely nothing inconsistent with it at all.
You're exactly right. I mean, you know, within Christianity, you have the Crusades, whatever, but they went completely against what Christ taught and what the moral law teaches. However, with Stalin, Hitler, Tao, you know, the problem is that there is no problem. There is no right. There is no wrong.
Right.
Therefore, if you kill 30, why not 31, 35? People.
And on top of that, no one should even be able to criticize them for killing 30 million people.
Well, exactly. Well, because they're just people. They're just blind, pitiless, products of DNA amassed over, you know, a period of time, you know, eventually you know, we're just floating around on this speck of dust lost right. in a hostile universe, and we're eventually just going to perish in the heat death of the whole universe in a small amount of time.
And that's one of the things that is so, you know, great about Christianity, because in Christianity, we are made in the image yeah. of God. We are valuable because we exist. We are valuable because God made us in his image. No other reason. Right. We are valuable. With all these other world, with the way that the atheism works out and the way that those who deny yeah. moral law, there is absolutely no reason to value any human life, to value anything,
right.
period.
Well, you know, what's, I think, even great about Christianity is, yeah, you're right. I mean, you have value. And here's the thing, within the Christian worldview, even the atheist has value. Even the atheist is made in the image of God.
Right.
But within atheistic worldview, yeah, whatever. Yeah, that's really what it amounts to. It's just, yeah, whatever.
Right, right.
And
right.
so it's just really, nobody lives like that. Nobody can consistently live like that. Nobody does. And that's the whole point of talking about the moral law, is that if the moral law can't exist without God, and there is an obvious moral law, then God exists.
Right.
And that is the argument in and of itself.
Someone has to be the lawgiver.
Right.
If there is a law, someone must be the law. Can you imagine society? Can you imagine yeah. just waking up tomorrow, there is no moral law, there's nothing written in the heart, there's nothing to say that there's right or wrong.
Yeah.
Can you imagine what kind of chaos would break out instantaneously?
Yeah.
Because there's no longer anything wrong with rape.
Right.
There's no longer anything wrong with stealing. There's no longer anything wrong
yeah.
with murder.
Right. Well, it's really kind of interesting that there is actually an alternative for that atheists have now gone to, that because there are some atheists that will hold the moral absolutes. And the position has been called, been dubbed atheistic moral realism. And it's really been considered more of a halfway house for atheists that can't stomach the moral nihilism that their ideas usher in. And they basically say, no, there really are moral absolutes, but no, there is no God that grounds them. And I think that this is a really strange position, because I think three really strong criticism can be laid against it. Number one, what does it mean for just justice or mercy or love to exist? Like in some platonic form out there in the ether, not grounded in anything metaphysical or ontological. It just exists.
So there's some love just floating around in the atmosphere.
Yeah, there's just some love. Just feel the love, man. And yeah, I mean, What does that mean? It means absolutely nothing. It's just floating out there unintelligibly. But let's suppose for a second that mercy or justice did happen to exist. Why would I be duty-bound to be just or
yeah.
merciful
yeah.
or kind? Or, you know, just pick whatever moral flavor you want. I have no reason to be just or merciful if these things just exist. I mean, nothing imposes a duty on me in this instance.
Right, right.
So I think that's just the second criticism. The third is, okay, let's suppose that there is this justice that exists, and we are the product of blind, pitiless indifference, and, you know, we come up, why do we happen to be the sort of creatures that can, that correspond to these moral values? Why does the lion do anything wrong when it kills the zebra?
Absolutely not.
Right, or whenever the eagle steals the fish from another eagle,
right.
has it done anything wrong? Why do we say that it's wrong for humans? Well, because it's written on the heart,
right,
and
right.
we know that, hey, there's something wrong here.
That's what separates
us. Because we are separate from the animals, in that we have a dignity because we are made in the image of God.
Right.
And the thing is that atheists realize it. Everybody realizes this right here. It's just within an atheistic system, there's no reason, there's no grounding for that morality. And that's the whole point, and that is the basic moral law.
Now, I know you may have a couple other items, but I'm gonna try to get to a couple of objections, because time
that's
is
fine.
Already starting
oh,
to run
man.
Down. These are the objections that people will raise against the moral law. And I imagine that the first one is, and the most important one is that if there is a perfect moral law giver, then why is there evil? There should be no evil if there's a perfect moral law giver.
Yeah, this is by far the most popular criticism and response to the moral law, is like, well, yeah, why if God is all good and all powerful, why is there evil at all? Well, remember what my argument is that, remember, if God doesn't exist, then there's not evil either. So what are you calling evil?
Right.
Is this just a word game that you're playing? But, you know, my argument could be restated. If God doesn't exist, then objective moral values don't exist. Evil exists, therefore objective moral values exist, i.e. some things are really evil, therefore God exists. So my argument stands either way.
Right.
But this right here, remember the story that I said about Ravi Zacharias? And that was like the very first statement that the student shot up was, how can you say there's, you know, a God when there's so much evil in the world? Well, and that's room for a whole nother show right there, but it's basically they are not inconsistent simply because you can't even define what is evil without a moral law. And I would say that it's very important not to make not say that, well, you can't have good without evil. No, you can have good without evil, but you can't have evil without good.
Yeah.
So I think that's an important distinction that a lot of people don't make.
And just to summarize what you just said, if someone says, why is there evil? Well, if there is no God, then there's no evil. If you're discerning something as evil, yeah, then that, you're actually making a case for God.
Right, because what are you complaining about?
Right.
Because if God doesn't exist, then there's not anything evil
right
at all.
There's no such thing as evil.
Right, so why are you even asking the question? And that's really the whole point.
And the next objection, it is the culture that determines... it's the culture that determines what is moral or immoral.
Yeah, two things I think can be said about this right here is because it's usually tied very closely to, well, it's all based on society as well. Well, not everything that's learned from through society is learned from society. Okay. For example, you know, we know math and logic through society, but those aren't based on society. Morality is the same way. We discover it. We don't invent it. We don't create it. We just simply discover it. The herd mentality works the same way. If we only worked on our instincts, then we would only work from our instincts, but sometimes we don't. Some people show self-sacrificial love, and that's inconsistent with the instinct for self-provision.
Now, okay, I have the last objection.
Yeah.
30 seconds to answer this one.
Okay.
Time is just flown by. Well, actually, okay. Yeah, we're going to try to do this one. All
okay.
Right. People disagree on moral issues. If people disagree on moral issues, then there seems to be no consistent moral law between them.
Yeah, no, that's just making a distinction between what is the case and what ought to be the case. For the simple reason, yeah, people disagree on, let's say, abortion, whatever, but nobody disagrees that murder is wrong. With the abortion case, for example, it's just, well, is the fetus a human?
Okay, thanks a lot. Thanks for joining me. Be sure to join me again next week. And until then, goodbye and God bless.